Five, four, three, two, one. I'm John Miglosh for the WDMA, and we're going to be talking about CCPA and innovation today. But first, this is a little bit new commercial from Volkswagen Australia, and it's about a light keeper, and he's changing the light bulb right now, it looks like, although I don't think they would touch the bulb like that inside of a real lighthouse bulb. Those halogens, you wouldn't want to, you know, you're not supposed to ever touch them with your hands. But, you know, they probably don't know that at the ad agency. Anyway. And it would be way brighter than that. It wouldn't be the kind of thing you could handle. But anyway, he's looking around. He's working on a lighthouse. And then I'll share my take on this commercial, which I think you'll see. He's working on painting the lighthouse, and he's looking out to sea. There we go. We skip a ways down here. And here comes the little mail boat, which is what he's waiting for. He's coming down the stairs to his car, which is a Volkswagen, with the steering wheel on the wrong side. He's driving down to the mailbox. What would you drive if you didn't need to? There you go. Let's go for a drive. Volkswagen. Okay, so now, right? Now you see what that's about. You see that that's about driving on a little tiny road over here, little tiny road, right? That's all there is. You should have made the road up to the bottom of the lighthouse. You wouldn't have had all those stairs to cover. Anyway, I'm guessing that's a real lighthouse somewhere. But what's he driving to get? The mail. He wants his mail. That's the essence of this commercial. VW gets it. Mail is what you want and what you'll break up your day and go for a drive to get your mail. Let's get over to the ad of the day. Okay, from Amy Houston. Let's go for a drive. She's not going to agree with that. I hope she watches it. Okay, Volkswagen's first brand new campaign in Australia for 7 years. And there's going to be a theme called Let's Go for a Drive. Matt Chandler is the creative director. And Michael Stanecki, I can't read this little fine print. Okay, other big news. The pancake of the month this month is a new program from IHOP is the Thin Mint Stack. I got so excited, I actually looked up where's the nearest IHOP to me, and I found out there's a new one that's a mere 20-minute drive away. I don't know if that'd be good for me. Right before the summer swimsuit season, it's Girl Scout cookie season. Thin mints are everyone's favorite, accounting for more than 25% of cookies sold. I did not know that. Okay, running March 1st through March 31st. You missed it for today's breakfast, but for tomorrow morning, it would be great. Okay, and you can get it as a full stack or a side. IHOP began the Pancake of the Month program just last month with the chocolate strawberry flavor of Valentine's Day. How did I miss that? I don't know. You might have missed it too, so you got it here. Okay, now they've got a new loyalty program called the International Bank of Pancakes. You download the app. If you order the Thin Mint Pancake of the Month two or more times in the same month, I wonder if it counted if I add two orders on the same day. Probably not. Okay, I don't know. We need some clarification there. I don't see anybody from IHOP listed, but I'll look up in the show notes and see if I can find anybody. Okay, and if you go and order the Pancake of the Month once a month for the next year, then you can qualify for 100 points, which has got all kinds of prizes. Although I think that's a little long for most people to think out, you know, that I'm going to go to every. What if there's one I just don't like? I mean, I think that's a little bit too hard. Too hard for me to join. Too hard to download the app. Too hard. That's my marketing advice for IHOP. Okay, this is a scary one from Stephanie Liu. California's privacy laws put second-party data on notice, which is like rented lists, okay? So there's a settlement with DoorDash that just got done. And Stephanie says, a measly, I don't think business writers should editorialize like that. A measly $375,000 fine. It's probably way more than their little, whoever rented it, their ad campaign. But DoorDash is the one who got fined, not the mailer, I don't think. Because it seems as though it was another company mailed it. But here's the interesting part. One of the DoorDash customers said she intentionally used an alias to protect her privacy, particularly to conceal her actual home address. Now, I've got a question. Did they really share her information then? If it's not really her home address, her name and home address, and I know what she means. She put a middle letter in it, or she changed it, whatever she did. She did something different to it. But if she calls it an alias, or maybe just Stephanie's calling it that, then it still does protect her privacy, and it isn't, and DoorDash shouldn't be fined at all. But the real issue here, and this is the scary part, is that the way this happened was it went into a marketing co-op. And it's not a very well-run one, and I'll tell you why. I don't know who it is, but if it's a marketing co-op, then at minimum, they should reconcile the names and not be renting decoy names, which is what this lady created. It's a long-standing, age-old technique in direct mail, where we take the names and we modify a few of them to see when our mailing pieces get delivered, or to see if our list has been stolen, okay? Which it sounds like it almost was, and why DoorDash would be liable for that, I don't know. It seems like the co-op would. But if you put an alias name into a co-op, it will match. It will match somebody because they have compile names mixed in there, and the alias would get corrected to the actual name and address and would not be trackable by the consumer. So some mailers, I've been told, would unethically mail the multis, knowing full well that if someone matched many times, they weren't a decoy name. It doesn't help much. It doesn't do much. But it's a way they would actually acquire the multis. They would keep them on file, knowing that it was safe to mail them over and over and over, even though they hadn't been paying for them. There's a lot more to this than meets the eye, and I would love to hear more about this. But the challenge here is that if you put your names in a co-op and someone else unethically uses that name, are you liable? Sounds like here the original owner or the original acquirer of the name, DoorDash, in their privacy statement, or in the view of California, has to deal with this issue, has to deal with, you know, can you join a co-op with California? Can you put your California names in a co-op in this condition? Well, like I said, if the co-op is well run, this should never happen. They should never have mailed the unique name that was put into the DoorDash file to that address. Right? Do you understand that? I don't know if you do. It doesn't matter. Okay. It also means that California is using a broad definition of sale because the co-op may not pay DoorDash for those names. They may just exchange them for the use of other prospect names around their DoorDash network. I don't know. It's very vague. And so, Stephanie, I'm going to reach out to and see if any of these questions make sense. Also, consent is not a set and forget it. Okay. A consumer needs to be able to revoke consent. Now, the other thing that's really important here is that if the consumer, here's the question, did the consumer revoke consent to DoorDash, or did they merely create this trackable alias and not tell DoorDash? In which case, it's entrapment, if you ask me. I wonder if the consumer benefited financially from this lawsuit. If they did, that's a real big kettle of worms. Can of worms, kettle of fish, kettle of something. Okay, and you understand why, and this is why, you never want to delete a name that's revoked consent. Even though California suggests or expects you to delete a name where they've revoked consent, you need to keep it in a separate file in order to prevent it from being re-given to a co-op or remailed, if that's what you're doing with your names. Does that make sense? It's serious stuff. $375,000 would, you know, pay for my services for a year. So very, very concerning case. Probably no one involved understands long-standing practice to protect consumers, to allow them to opt out, and to ensure that that practice is continued. So we're building case study that actually undermines all databases. Just want you to know. Okay, CMOs want innovation, but most don't understand what it is, that it's a spectrum. This is an interesting article by Phil Rowley. It's not, you know, it's not direct marketing by any means, okay? He says, Phil says, there's two mistakes we make when we're trying to be innovative. One is not agreeing to a collective definition. And he says that if you have a collective definition before you start, then you have an objective measure. Well, not really. Not if it's a collective definition. What you really want is you want an objective definition. A collective is, it's like collective ethics. It's not really ethics. Ethics are things that transcend collective agreement, right? This was the problem with the DARE program. They would teach the kids that drugs had bad consequences. Remember the frying pan? This is your brain. This is your brain on drugs. Smashing the plate or whatever. And there's two problems with that. One is when kids first try drugs, the consequences aren't realized immediately. And all humans minimize the consequences of their bad judgment. I do, you do, right? So now the next day after the kid tries drugs, he comes back and says to his friends, it was fun, it was great, it was a party. We all should try drugs because the consequences aren't that bad. And now they make a collective decision that drugs are okay. And so they've basically undermined their own collective definition. Same thing here. Okay, you can't decide the rules of the game. You can't decide the rules of the game once the game is over, or until the game is over, or decide it at all. Real definitions you don't get to decide on. I just crisscrossed that out. Okay, the other is a bad definition, which that would be. Sorry, but I have a master's in philosophy. Innovation could be defined as something new and useful, okay? But it's tricky. You know, it's tricky because some of the great innovations and some of the great marketing successes are things like Arm & Hammer baking soda being used not for baking, but as a deodorant in a refrigerator. And now and underarm deodorant, and now toothpaste, and, you know, a whole plethora of new products, none of which are new per se. There's always things that could absorb odors in your refrigerator, but this was a good one, and it was inexpensive, and it made a lot of sense, and there's all kinds of other toothpaste, but now Arm & Hammer, people did use baking soda for toothpaste. So that makes it difficult. Innovation, the question really is innovation worth a dime? I'll tell you what's worth a dime. I've been working on my third edition, and I've spent quite a bit of time writing 33 case studies as part of the new book, most of whom were breakthroughs of insight, not data per se. I've added the ones that aren't data related because they're just as powerful. And where they came from was someone coming in, looking around and saying, have you ever thought of doing this? Or being given a problem and then saying, have you ever thought of this? Or sleeping on it and coming up with it. And, you know, we could actually go through the case studies. It might be fun if you're interested. But the truth is that insight is more important than innovation. Most of the time when I get called in, most of the time there are untapped resources. They're hidden. There are hidden acres of diamonds, if you've heard that story. Or the Sutter's Mill story, where they sold the mill to go look for gold, only to return years later, and miners were digging it all up because Sutter's Mill was where the 49ers, if you wonder where the San Francisco 49ers name comes from, it's from the people that discovered gold at Sutter's Mill near San Francisco. So the 49ers were digging it up, and the farmers who had sold their farm to go look for gold found out that they had sold the gold along with the farm. So what do we do? How do you innovate? Well, first of all, realize that it can be incremental. It can also be exaptive. No idea what that word means. No idea. Exaptive, never seen it before. And writers should be careful to use words that writers haven't ever heard of, other writers. Or disruptive. But a lot of it, like I said, is observation and insight. And this OMG Futures, How to Innovate, it's like a 80-page document. No, well, this is 47, but it's spreads. So I'm going to upload that because it's available for free. And you can learn about all different kinds of innovation and theory. And it's really, really a masterclass in innovation. But observation may be more important than innovation. Have a great day. Like and share. And reach out to me if you have a puzzle that you'd like some alternate out-of-the-box insight on. Have a great day. Bye-bye.